Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another special edition of The Session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. And as you know from our last episode, now we're doing kind of a pared-down special format for The Session during the COVID-19 lockdown. And of course, a big part of that is that I can't have my whole crew in here in the studio with me while we are sheltering at home and practicing social distancing. So if you want your fill of the whole crew, though, we did do a live Zoom video call on Facebook Live yesterday. You can go find that on the Brewing Network Facebook page. And I think we're going to try to do at least one of those a week with different people. Last night we had a special guest, a special visit, I should say, from Nathan Smith, our resident homebrew expert who's been at home sheltering and homebrewing a whole bunch. I think he said he's been homebrewing. He's homebrewed 6 times since we were locked down back in March here in the Bay Area. And we had Sully and Teresa. Beardy came on for a few minutes at the end to say hello. Kim Schimpke, Bevo. So it was a great way for us to catch up with each other, but also to kind of interact with you folks, which you can find over on our Facebook page. Just search the Brewing Network there. And like I said, we're going to try to do more of that. I do want to say that even while we're doing our shows on a different schedule right now, we do still have all of our wonderful sponsors. And, you know, I couldn't be doing this without them. And now more than ever, that's true. Our Spring Brews Festival, which was a big fundraiser for our local community as well as the Brewing Network, was canceled. Our Spring Brews Fest did not happen in March. And then we had the tour lined up. Which we had a lot of sponsors ready to do that, and I was going to bring home a lot of content for you, and that's been postponed. So I will say that now more than ever, our sponsors are really important to keep this show alive. You know, we're one of those small businesses that's hit quite hard, but we're doing our best. Haven't had to lay off the BN staff, which is cool, although if you listen a lot, you know they don't get paid that much anyway, but still. I'm proud that we haven't been had to do that yet, and I hope that that's going to continue. So I want to thank our main sponsor of this show. They've been with us since day one, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com right now and check out everything that you need. While you're home sheltering in place, you can get all the ingredients you need to homebrew, and they're just wonderful over there. In fact, Olin, one of the owners there, reaches out to me, I think, at least once a week just to see how I'm doing and how we're doing over here, and I just think that's really nice of them. So please go support good companies like that. The 21st Amendment Brewery, also been with us since near day one. And, you know, 21st Amendment is one of those breweries you're going to read about in the news that, like many other small businesses in the U.S. right now, is, you know, hit by this with bars closed and keg sales, you know, come to a screeching halt. You know, this affects everybody. And the 21st Amendment's really been there for me, and I can't thank Sully and Nico enough for that. You can go to 21st-amendment.com. You'll probably find it on the shelves of your local Safeway and other places, and you should support them. They're great at supporting the local community and homebrewers and brewers alike. Blickman Engineering, who's been with us for so long, you know, in support of Brew Strong, and those shows will be coming to you soon. I think I have a couple of episodes recorded for you that I just need to get edited and posted. I'm running the hop grenade at the same time now, so forgive me that I'm a little slow getting those up to you. But Blickman Engineering, just another wonderful human being, John Blickman and that company, wonderful innovations in the homebrew world. I feel like I'm Trump right now. I should say tremendous more or something. But I really do love these people. So, you know, I just can't thank them enough. On today's show, I have interviewed Arizona Wilderness Brewing Company. They're out of Gilbert, Arizona. And co-owners, co-founders, Jonathan Buford and Patrick Ware came on the show with me. I had a really fun time speaking with them. We got to talk, of course, about how they're running things during this shutdown. And they had some really good ideas about how they're taking care of their employees and their staff. So you can tune in for that. But also about how, you know, they had, I forget what number they gave, but let's just call it, I think 99% of their sales were on premise. I mean, they were really one of those accounts that was doing everything on premise, and they got closed like everybody else. And they did a very quick and effective pivot, and I think it was an interesting story to listen to. I really relate to those guys, and I had a great time just listening to them. It was pretty fascinating. So I'm going to take a quick little break to thank some sponsors again. And then when we come back, Arizona Wilderness.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. I am back in the studio, my lovely studio that I miss so much. I'm back here, and today I'm with Jonathan Buford and Patrick Ware from Arizona Wilderness Brewing Company out of Gilbert, Arizona. Right, guys? Gilbert.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. We're proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. You know, I'm not from Arizona, but I am a desert rat. I'm from the Southern California Mojave Desert.
That's the shitty part. I love that. I love that shitty part.
It is 100% the shitty part. It was the meth capital of the world. I somehow made it out.
What do you mean, Justin, what do you mean was?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Cleaned it up now, John.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's really clean.
Oh, I didn't get that memo. Okay.
Yeah, it's all organic food and people who climb and stuff.
it's organic meth, sure. Maybe. So, you know, I've known Jonathan for several years. We met down at the Firestone Walker Invitational Beer Festival. I met Patrick last year and have never gotten the chance to have you guys on the show. And that's my fault. And I'm a little bummed that, you know, I'm doing this special series, that the circumstances that I'm finally getting to talk to Arizona Wilderness here is about what breweries are doing during this pandemic. So listeners, you know, we're going to have a fun, like rip roaring episode with Arizona Wilderness in the near future. But today I do want to know just a little bit about how you guys got started, when Arizona Wilderness was founded. Just tell us a little bit about yourselves before we get into the dire straits of the situation.
Sure. So this is Jonathan, and I kind of founded the company with the mission to showcase the beauty and diversity of Arizona. I think you even made fun of it once on air. If I recall, we bantered back and forth or something along the way where, like, what the fuck? Wilderness is in Arizona, and that's the perfect candidate for what I believe my mission is to say, like, this. The Southwest region, this desert region, has a lot to offer. And if we don't start to treat it with the respect it deserves, we're going to fucking diminish it, you know? And so Wilderness Brewing Company actually the impetus came from a moment I was crossing, you know, the signs, the wilderness for National Forest signs that would essentially say, welcome to this particular wilderness. And I thought, what a really, really unique, beneficial to society sign, imaginary line that I could take into the brewery world. And John Palmer had his book out. Obviously everyone knows how to brew, and the Bible, if you will. And I had that probably in my backpack and sat and said, shit, I want to combine these two loves that I have of creating craft beer and wilderness, the outdoors, and specifically Arizona. So that's the impetus on my level. And then over time I realized I fucking suck at brewing. And I don't actually love it as much as I thought I did. I love connecting with people. So this particular guy named Patrick down the road at another brewery, some people thought we looked like each other, and they kept saying, hey, you look like Pat from Santan Brewing Company. And I said, well, I got to meet this handsome devil. He looks like me, you know. So that's where I approached Pat, and I think Pat can take it. There's two different versions of the story. Mine was, I was eloquently, you know, an entrepreneur coming in and offering a job. That's my version of the story.
Well, I think at the time, you know, that was in your Union Jack heyday, right? So there was a few pints involved, and it might have been misconstrued a little bit. And also probably a little bit jaded on my part because the industry was popping off and I was working 12 to 16 hours a day. So yeah, I was a little bit of an angry cuss at that point. So yeah. You said essentially to me, hey, would you like to work with me and start this brewery? And that kind of came off to me like, you're going to work for me, boy. And so I had an adverse reaction to that. But, you know, over time I got the charming Jonathan that we all know. And I, you know, some of that beautiful homebrew crossed my lips and I really, you know, hadn't tasted anything like that, from anybody on the homebrew scale ever. And some of the concepts that, you know, some of them I think were directly pulled from this show. He was speaking about things that were not being talked about at the brewery that I worked at. And it was much more broad and diverse than what was in my scope. And cause I was a little bit more of a manufacturing guy at that point. So, you know, that was kind of a selling point, put some beer across the lips. Yeah.
John, you do come off a little abrasive at first. You're aware of this about yourself?
I used to. I gave that up. I'm not fighting out of a paper bag anymore. Like, I'm not like, I don't have the chip on my shoulder that I feel like I had where you start with absolutely nothing. You have a book and a fucking $7 bank account. And so, yes, every single moment I had, I felt like I needed to grab it. I think right now, and you hear my dog, by the way, that's Daisy, the wilder dog who goes on me. I can't get her to stop. I'm sorry.
It's okay. All okay. Audio problems are fine during this pandemic.
Yes. That's the one shining light of COVID is like you can finally fuck up audio.
Yeah. Everyone's like, what? It's the least of my worries, you know?
Exactly. I'm hearing other humans. This is great. I found my center, if you will. So sure. I have my mother's personality. I'm a mama's boy 100%, and that's how my mom was portrayed. But now I think Pat and I are in a more kumbaya phase of, okay, we don't have to every single moment go amplified to make ourselves known. So I hope that is the case. Maybe I'm just full of shit. I'm still a complete jerk. But
no, I'm sure that there is. And I don't even say that to pick on you. In fact, when you describe it, I can fully relate. You know, when I started the Brewing Network, we were the first beer podcast, but within like a month or two, there was several, and I started a war with every single one of them. I hated it. I had everything to prove that everyone else was awful and I was the best, and I don't feel the same way anymore at all. So it's sort of really...
By the way, I've had this question for a while since podcasting has become popular. Were you ever called a podcast?
No. I have only recently even started to refer to us with that term.
Yeah, because I don't I remember you saying live stream or like you were like internet radio. So you really were one of the first. You truly can say that.
That is definitely something I don't pat myself on the back about much, but that's one of them. And I hated the term. I still am a little uncomfortable with it. But I thought it was a weird invented word. And what I really didn't like was that the group as a whole was a bunch of like no talent hacks, like just anybody could record a podcast, right? So I didn't feel like that was me. I felt like I was a very talented hack, and so I just refused to use the word for a long time. It's funny, no one I don't think has noticed that other than you, John.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. We delved into podcasting recently because we're bored and we have a lot of words to say. And I'm like, what the root of this word? What the fuck is it? And I looked into on your website. And I'm like, you never called it a podcast. That you raised 20 steps in my mind. Like Justin was podcasting. You're a hipster of podcasting. You did it before it was cool.
I'm now a grandfather of podcasting. Basically.
That's true. You're a sage, a wise old sage.
Yeah, this June will 15 years for us. So, and it's been fun. It's been fun. And we're still, someone asked me the other day how long we'll do it. And I was like, I have nothing else to do. I have no other talents. Like, this is it. So,
well, you're a millionaire now because you started a tap.
Much money.
You're fine.
Yeah.
You have nothing to do, right?
Exactly. Let's talk about that. All right, guys. And maybe I can just lead you in by, you know, so my place here in California, we were shut down real early on. March 16th was our last day fully open. And we were shut down by the county. And we were shut down for a couple of weeks before they let up a little bit. And now we're in a pattern where we're allowed to sell cans to go. And the California ABC is allowing us to sell growlers to go too, and that's what we're doing to stay alive. And I could, you know, as we go, maybe I'll dive into that a little more. But that's what we had to do. We got closed. Now we're just open, not even with staff. It's me and my partner, just here schlepping beer all day, like my old days, to pay enough bills to be ready to open again. Now you guys aren't just a bar; you're a brewery as well, and you've got what, two locations?
We do have two locations. One is, you know how the first year is just band-aiding things together, and one was just getting over that band-aid phase. And so sure. February and March, specifically those 2 months, spring training baseball comes into play. We have like most of the staff of Russian River comes down. That's how we've gotten to know them so well. And a lot of really great people coming to the Valley to watch their team. And that's just chaos. It's wonderful. It's where the money is actually made, but it's hard to go from 60 to zero on a dime like we were asked to do. And we were just in the middle of that, man. And downtown was just like, all right, we're learning what this is. This downtown Phoenix location is just coming into it. And the first wave of it, I don't know, March 16th sounds about right for us too, though we're we're a little more Wild West in our approach. I remember we have a multiple sclerosis day every single year, and downtown was in the middle of that. So we didn't want to cancel. We brew a beer for that foundation. My wife happens to have MS, so it's near and dear to us. And I remember looking around going, man, there's other bars in the country and world right now shut down, but we are packed to the brim. And it sounds about that date. It was a Saturday, like 13th or 14th. And I just was like, man, I would hate if we have to shut down. Didn't feel quite real. Like, oh, other bars shut down. We're not going to have to.
Just to put in perspective here, that spot, you know, the downtown spot is upwards of 600 seats. And the original Gilbert spot grew to a 350, 400 seat restaurant as well. So, you know, that is truly is our business model. It's 90%. Pints and on premise and then package to go. So yeah, the COVID situation, you know, before we were able to maneuver and do what we do is just assess and problem solve. It looked so dramatic. Cause that's what we hedged all our bets on, was having people there in the building. So sorry to cut you off, John, but, that's just like the context of the size of and what we do. You know, we truly, that's what our experience is having people in our spaces. So,
and we're getting really good at hosting annoying fucking cub guy, and like he comes in, he and she comes in swarms, and we just got good at that kind of that camaraderie that you know, to host, I think it's 627 people with a downtown location. Wow. To host that many and be good at it, you clearly know that we had 170 staff members. This is the same guy that you met all those years back who still, I just didn't know much about what was going on. So when I say we were full steam and had to hit the brakes, there was some relentless moments. And then there was a lot of fear, you know, like, holy shit, the loans, the just the partners and the employees. It wasn't just like, oh, this is going to suck. It was, Pat and I invested literally every dollar into downtown Phoenix as our expansion plan. Every dollar we have, our houses are on the loan. because it was going so well. That was not an issue.
We sucked at it for the first year. I mean, that first season we did okay, but you know, it was something that it took us a year to learn it. And so we're finally getting into that flow of, okay, I think we're getting a good roll on this and we're starting to understand it. It's a big space, large parties, you know, curating to that and becoming different, a different style of service, this counter service mentality, these big, large groups, you know, and live music and some things that were kind of foreign to us before, being downtown in the art scene was different. So, you know, that was a dramatic moment to like halt all that all of a sudden, then ask, basically go into scavenge mode, because we had, you know, 500 kegs of beer that was like, okay, that you got to sell that somehow. I don't know what to do with that. And you also have, you know, $40,000 worth of food and two coolers. Oh, what do you do with that? You know, that's going to go bad quick. So that was the big scary moment. And then obviously we had to tell over 100 people, hey, don't come to work. And then that was the pinnacle of that kind of scary moment that we went through.
It's heartbreaking, that part of it. And I don't think that there's a better word than terrifying when you see that happening. I said to Nico Freccia in my last interview like this, that I felt like we're kind of in a state of shock, in the sense that you guys didn't completely freak out. You're talking about how you were scared. You're talking about how you had to do these things, but you didn't like freak out and jump off a cliff or go screaming, you know. And I just think nobody really, it felt surreal, didn't it? It felt like it couldn't really be happening, even though you clearly were taking action.
Justin, there's like 25 people in my Rolodex that I go to for times like that, of like, hey, person with wisdom, Sean O'Sullivan, Nico's partner, would be one of them. But one in particular, Chris Bianco of Pizzeria Bianco here, he's a James Beard winning chef. And when I called him and he said, you know, this guy was open during 9/11. This guy started in 88 and has been all over the world. He's one of the chefs that's magnanimous. When he said, I have nothing for you right now, I am fucking, when he goes silent, yeah, you go, oh, Jeff Bagby, a guy that I've considered a great friend, call Jeff, silence. You call people who just that were so deep. Jeff Stuffings over at Jester King, just these people who you just said they can get through anything. When the phone went silent for 10 seconds after, you were like, okay, so we really are all in this boat. There's not one person who's like, I got a secret for you. Watch this. I'm going to do something special. It was, no, I don't know how to get through this. I have no way to do it. Yeah. And that was even, I think, compounded it, Justin, is, you know, we were on the phone with Zane Lamprey at the time. And Zane Lamprey was going to be doing a cross-country tour with his stand-up comedy. Mm. And he was so gung-ho. He was excited to come to our spot downtown in specific because of its size. And he was like, I'll be coming in May. And then over time, learning a guy who's been in this industry for 20 years, also say the same, like, you know, I don't know what to do. And my brand's based on being around people. And that was even more to me, more compounding, was the great people in our industry are looking at this as an unforeseeable moment. There was no strategy. There's just the smartest Harvard guys didn't know what to do. The brewers who made the best beer went, what do we do? And that will mark for me what this represents the most. It's just the uncontrollable future, the unforeseen, the fog of war.
Yeah. And that's the anxiety inducing part at this point, is there's so many unknowns. I think at the same time as what you say is happening, the only, you know, maybe one of the reasons we didn't freak out is that there's also some comfort in knowing, okay, well, we're all kind of fucked together and it can't possibly be that the whole world's going to blow up. We can't all catch fire at this. So that's disconcerting, it in some ways it's comforting, and it made me at least feel like, okay. The government, like, someone's going to throw some lifelines out, because we don't just all stop ceasing to be functional in business or in life or anything else, you know.
There were a few of those moments where we did go to super backup plan, right? Let's go to the food distributors, see what kind of frozen food that they can allocate for us in case that all food is cut off to Arizona because our lifeline runs from California over, you know, and then that's where we start to formulate, okay, we really got to rely on our local purveyors and push people that direction and have them engage in that and continue some of the initiatives that we have, because we know that that happens within our control, you know, and we're not relying on big food systems and big barley systems. We can actually control that ourselves due to the hyper local nature that we've put ourselves in. And a lot of those purveyors have actually worked with us and delayed payments and, you know, lowered their prices, which is, you know, it's been a savior for us. And it's, and the immense support from the people that have engaged in our product, but they've just engaged in a different manner. You know, we had a discussion with David Walker earlier and he was stating that they were about 70% of their sales, which is incredible. I mean, that's unthinkable that you could still be at that level. And when I think about it now, we're actually pretty close to that ourselves without having these massive taproom spaces based on beer delivery. And that's something that had to be created overnight. That was an adaptability principle. Just as if you were in the wilderness and a massive storm rolls in, like you have to just adapt and survive. And our team has just done an incredible job of that. I mean, John and I can run into the fire and that's immediately what we did. Our gut reaction was, okay, let's do something about this. So we filled my truck up and started driving around town. I mean, it was crazy because we were doing that 10 hours a day, just hand delivering beer to people. And then the team just took up the slack and said, okay, I see what direction you guys are going. Let's do this. It's just, it's amazing what they've accomplished in such a short period.
What's so interesting about this, doesn't it feel like we're talking about 2 years ago or like a decade ago? Like this was fucking a month ago. We're acting like this is post-mortem. Like we're wrapping up some crazy time. Well, we're in it and we're now currently managing the turd that has been handed to us. So I do want to reiterate, like this is still in the middle of it. And what we're just doing is talking about the beginning of how we were, you know, we saw this in a small television format in front of us going, oh shit, we have to react to this. Just a month later, we're still, I mean, we're a fraction of ourselves. We're not like, we didn't figure some magical equation out and save the world, but we do have some strategies that have worked.
I mean, we figured out how to kick the can down the road with rent and various things that it's still an obligation to us, but for now it's less of a worry. It's less of an imminent, this is going to matter to us within the next couple of weeks. So that's super helpful.
I have the same here at the Hop Grenade. We're not making enough to pay rent and to hire staff. You know, like there's a bunch of things we're not doing. But kick the can down the road is probably about the best analogy. You know, talking about how it feels like the past, I don't like to make like grandiose analogies like to, you know, historical trauma in the world. But you know, when we go to war, when there's 9/11, when we have no choice but to pick up and like run forward, we do tend to do that. Humans tend to do that. I'll even be a little patriotic and say Americans tend to do that.
America.
Yeah, I don't mind that every now and then, you know. That it does become almost normal very quickly, because if the anxiety was too great, we wouldn't be able to keep running forward. Does that make sense? Like it has to feel a little bit like it's the past already and normal. Otherwise, we probably psychologically couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, sans the death and the really, really hardships of it, I think some of us even liked to feel alive again. Craft beer and I guess life in general had a lot of I refer to it as the click and buy campaign, or the click and buy generation. We clicked it up to our fucking front door. I mean, how many beer festivals? You were in Australia. I was going to
New Zealand. Yeah,
I was going to see you in New Zealand. How you didn't grow up saying I'm going to travel to Europe four times in a year, every other year. And it's not that that's negative. It just got to be the point where I remember looking in the mirror going, what? I mean, could we have 22,000 breweries in America? It won't stop. So I'm not saying that's good. What I'm saying is it felt good to have a problem to solve again. It felt very similar to 2007, right. 8, 9, and 10 when you read John Palmer's book and went, holy shit, look at Sam Calagione on TV. We're going to band together and start a revolution. And I hate to even sound like I'm not referencing the horrible chaos that's happening, but I think you get what I'm saying.
I do.
There is some gusto in this, and you roll your sleeves up, and it felt like post World War II a little bit, where America's like, let's get this done, you know. So we're in the middle of that.
I will even add to that in a different way. You know, for me, I always seem to have 10 projects going on, and that can just tend to be complex and complicated. And I was talking to a good friend just the other day, saying, "Well, in some ways, I feel better about the simplicity of what's happening right now. And the simplicity is survival. I have one task at hand. It is to keep the doors open at the Hop Grenade so that I can eventually hire my team back. It is to keep the brewing network going. I have not had to lay off our brewing network staff, so I can keep paying them." And there's this survival simplicity that is making my life, I don't want to say easier, because none of this is easy, but less complicated, less complex. The idea is no longer complex.
I can so relate to you right now, and it's like we took Ritalin and we're all like focused on one thing now.
Yeah,
and my 700 tabs and like really strange side project emails where Pat was like, okay, sure, we'll do that. It's now... Patrick and I are seeing eye to eye on, let's just go in tomorrow and open and get that thing done. And at the end of the day, your safety of your employees, your business, and your own internal life is so basic, and it's easy to maintain. I didn't realize how fucking hard I made everything until this time. It's true.
It's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for self-reflection for sure. Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad you relate. I was feeling strange about that one. Just like you said, you don't want to diminish like the disaster that's happening, and I don't either. But the survival mode just kind of, and then it also breeds creativity. I mean, let's talk about that. You guys pivoted by, you said you just immediately started delivering beer.
Yeah. So one of our really talented employees who came from Other Half, he was running logistics for us, but he happened to have like a really unique skill in the tech side of things. So he just put together a Square site overnight and started routing drivers, you know, efficiently routing drivers and creating this whole backend system that would allow us to get product up and available. And then, you know, within a week, it was grown from a 20 mile radius to the entire valley. And then basically put us in a position where we're now, it's so strange for me to say this, but I am looking at purchasing a piece of equipment because now this is such a big part of our business that outsourcing and doing mobile canning really doesn't make sense at this point. And that's our bottleneck. You know, that's basically our restriction, is we don't have the ability to can enough beer, which is insane to think about.
It is, especially when you just said how on premise was the virtually the entire model, and here, so we're seeing that here in the Bay Area. The Hop Grenade, we were always allowed to sell bottles and cans to go, and we have two door refrigerators that we do this out of, so not a lot, but we were losing some of our volume to bottles and cans. You know, we make more on draft too, just like you guys do, right? Like there's more margin. But I would say our sales were kind of down 10% because they were shifting over to bottles and cans. Well, now that I've done this online ordering and this pickup stuff, even when we open again, I can't see stopping it. I think we would make up the 10% that I was losing. I will now make up if I keep it going. So you're talking about buying equipment. I'm talking about hiring another person when we're back up to just do that, you know.
God's got a weird sense of humor, or, you know, whatever universal God there is. It's like you're fucking teaching us this really unique lesson. While I've talked to every single brewer, has all had the strong ones, the ones who were strong going in, have all had some insight gained and said, I didn't know we could do that. I'm probably going to continue to do that. even when things go back to normal. I mean, we're going to be a beer delivery machine that we are now because we just invested a huge portfolio of our business towards it. And yeah. It's working. And you go, well, I was wondering where growth would come from. We thought, man, the brick walls in front of us, we might see wilderness at its finest. I don't know if we're going to go regional anytime in the next decade. And then this comes along and you go, oh, we were not seeing the whole picture. And beer delivery, I didn't even know it was fucking legal, Justin. I didn't even know that you could do that. And we called our craft brewers guild. And they're like, yes, you could have done this the whole time. And it just, the reaction was met with what I, again, we referenced this American way, but it's funny. I didn't get told no once in this whole cycle. It was, yes, now you can deliver beer. Yes, you can do those things. No, there's no more. Like it turned into like the lawless land because we are so value, our commerce is so valued in this country that it was like, just stay open and make money. And that's unique to experience.
And your brain kind of opens up to those opportunities. Next thing you know, after we get the, you know, a couple weeks under our belt of delivering beer, we do all draft cocktails at our spot. And it's all, you know, local spirits. And we had all these kegs laying around. I'm like, well, I can't pour those into a glass for somebody at one of these locations. Let's just start bottling it off tap and create some labels and get that out, you know. And so it's like it's this creativity principle of, oh, I guess we could do that. Let's try this out. You know, you have all these opportunities and abilities to maneuver now, which is really crazy because you would have been told no 100 times in a row if you asked that before.
Yeah. You know, I hear people complaining that, you know, in this crisis and in times of crisis, that our capitalist society turns socialist. Right. And there's some argument to be made with bailouts and such. But anybody who says that we're not at the top of our capitalist game right now is not an entrepreneur, because I'm seeing capitalist ingenuity left and right. It's what we're talking about. It's capitalists going, well, shit, we got to figure something out. You know, I was angry at my can sales for diminishing profits 10% and trying to figure out a way to shift away from them, right? And now I'm like, wait, why didn't you just embrace them? If that's where the people were going, why didn't you just embrace that and instead boost the sales of them? Which is clearly what I'm doing now because it's the only thing I can do. Nobody can come sit at my bar and have a pint. And to me, that's capitalism working.
Yeah, I think we're trying to react to that from both angles, where we have an incredible COO who's enacted this, you know, these lease negotiations and also procured PPP funds, as well as John and I's gut capitalistic reaction to create commerce and do it in a safe way, obviously. But, you know, that paired together, I think has put us in a decent position where we can go to sleep at night. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, Justin, you'll love this story. So that COO that we're talking about, he's a Harvard grad. He's the asshole who makes the lease you can't get out of. So he was the guy who actually created the lease for our Gilbert location. And it was like not manageable. Long story short, now he's our employee. And it's awesome to see him maneuver because all creative, you know, young entrepreneurs, they're going to butt head with a guy like this. You know, he's got his little fucking cufflinks with his acronym on it.
Air-conditioned seats in his Mercedes.
If he doesn't start his Mercedes 10 minutes before he gets into it, he's fucking mad because his air conditioning didn't turn on. But then you see him shine in a time like this, and he's having conversations with landlords that I don't truly understand. And I'm hoping that other breweries understand the value of your lease and your kind of that back end mumbo jumbo that you didn't really take much note of right now is coming massively into play to be able to get a rent abatement, which is essentially put it onto the end of your lease. So we have a 10-year lease. We took 3 months to put it at the end, and the next 3 months we don't pay. Those are the kind of scenarios that Pat and I would have just kind of like been drooling in a conversation going,
It really puts in perspective, you know, when you're talking about a lease, words like force majeure, where before, what does that mean? What's that really what's that for? Why are we wasting our time with it? And it really is situations like this. What if this happens? What if? And the what if scenario, entrepreneurs don't want to think about that. We want to think about the positive what ifs, not the if a lightning bolt strikes this pole on your patio and it falls on a person's head, what happens then? We don't think about that. We just think about that person having a great time and how many of their friends they can bring in.
That's your job. That's right. And too much of the thinking about the lightning bolts, by the way, and none of us sleep. And then what a miserable life that we have. So there's a reason for that.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And there's a reason for us. Look at us growing up, right? Like starting scrappy and like, I don't care. I'm going to do this podcast and we're eventually going to make money. I'm going to figure it out. You know, you guys are, you know, we're going to make beer. We're going to make the beer we want to make and people are going to buy it. And that's what I'm going to think about. And there's a need for that. Some people never start their dream. They never kick it off. They never, because they don't have that initial kind of hunger. But now, you know, that our industry has matured and hopefully we have too. And then things like these come up. It's time for us to mature in every aspect too. You have to become well-rounded. You know, the people, the list of people that you mentioned, John, you know, that you look up to and that you might give a phone call. When I think of those names, I don't really put myself on the level with them. I see them as much more well-rounded. You know, I'm a creative guy. I think you are, John. But there's a reason that they're so successful too, because they figured out, even if they had to hire to do those things, they're not good at, right?
Right, right. And if I had your number, I still wouldn't have called you.
Fair enough. Because I've been like, John, I don't know, man, I'm drunk. Again.
Right, what was your thing back in the day was like you couldn't keep homebrew in the garage because you'd drink it before it was fully fermented.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, it's look, we have had a lot of pieces fall into place because we had the 7 years. We started in 2013. We've had the ability to make mistakes. And those are, you know, it's all the fucking cliches, you know, but it's so true. You hire wrong. You hire wrong again. You hire wrong the third time and you start to go, oh, yeah, these people who are whatever, not, you know, fitting my system, I better interview better. And then over time you start to interview better. And then you find these gems that fit your system. You go into COVID scenarios with those people, as I believe we have. And yeah, you get to sit back and watch this beautiful thing happen. And we, you know, we all had to succumb to a smaller paycheck. We all had to, you know, enter a new atmosphere of don't think too creatively right now, or don't do too much. But those people were like, you know, we can get through this. And that's my biggest advice to any, what do I do? It's, I'm sorry if you don't have the right people around you right now, but don't do that. Don't have that mistake around you again. You having really intelligent people around you is just, it's the Warren Buffett kind of thing. Is you can sit back in your office and go, wow, these people I've hired are carrying me through this time, and they know how to interact with guests, and they know how to do the back end tax situation and lawyering. And Pat and I are very extremely lucky, but it's majority of it's because we got the fuck up for 7 years. And I feel like that's the biggest blessing, is we started in 13, when you could have pissed in a cup, put hops in it, and people just showed up, they lined up. And as the consumer got smarter, we had to get smarter with the consumer and try to outsmart the consumer in some ways. And in that sense, our pocketbooks did open to a payroll that was numbers I never, ever, ever would have dreamed about paying to numerous staff members. But now I look at it and go, well, God damn it, I'm so happy we did that. I'm so happy we have these people in our company. And that's one of the successes we've experienced right now, is systems need management, and we're fortunate to have good management.
I love that. Yeah, got to have talent around you, you know, to make it through this stuff. I think that's excellent advice to anybody. That and do whatever the fuck you have to do right now.
If you have a knife, you better start stabbing. If you know... You gotta figure something out. I'm telling you, seeing Pat, it was so funny day two. Like Pat has like this ebb and flow. We all have our ebb and flow, but Pat has this ebb and flow of if there's any threat of danger, he turns into this primordial character that's like, he claws come out, like he turns into a Wolverine type, and he literally starts loading up his truck with beer, and he's like, "I'm gonna fucking sell beer. We're gonna drive it around." It's an interesting reaction to see how people respond. Like the people who have gone into their hermit shells over this are also interesting to say, like, "So you just shut down? Okay, got it. It's over for now." And you don't know if you're going to come back. That's also a different, which is fine. You can react that way if you want.
It's really interesting to see how different people are to stress, you know, in these scenarios, and how resilient people are. You know, what is their gut reaction when something like this happens? Or, and it's not just a pandemic, right? It's things in your life. So how resilient are you to stress or to challenges or to change, you know, because change, how much change have we had in such a tiny period of time? So how well are you capable of adapting, you know?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And you are seeing different people react in different ways. And I'm not a big judger when it comes to that stuff. I think these kind of things just, you know, people behave differently. But you're right that it's interesting to watch because it is all different. And in my experience, it sounds like yours too, it's all fairly helpful too, you know, that we're not all exactly the same, you know, and I think that that's just pretty important. Do you guys mind if I ask a numbers question, like what percentage of your staff you were able to retain or bring back after the initial hit?
Yeah, day one, we broke a lot of company rules, by the way. We said we never use styrofoam and plastics. We're kind of one of those. Or we are one of those eco-friendly. So we did a lot of like, oh shit, we better contract. So we probably let go more than we needed because it felt like shutdown was imminent. We went from 170, and Pat, do you remember the exact number? It 120 about was the number we laid off by that's about.
Yeah, we were probably around that 50 range. Basically what we did, Justin, was we moved to a point where it was only salaried people and a few key hourly people. So those salaried people stepped their game up and basically absorbed all of the work. So you have your like head of restaurant operations is now running around doing stuff in the restaurant, and you know
reading an email saying you're going to get paid 25% to 50% less.
And so we did that as well, where it was salary people. Hey, you're gonna have to take a hit right now. John and I and Charles, our COO, said we're gonna take $0 for the foreseeable future. And then those 100+ people that were furloughed, John did a great job of just gathering the community and at least giving them. We said, hey, we can at least give them beer and food, right? Let's get them beer. Let's get them food. Let's work with some other local businesses to get them, you know, just a few things while they're kind of waiting and trying to see.
Yeah, and then, we traded gift cards, by the way, with other restaurants and said, hey, we'll give you, you know, 50 gift cards if you give us 50 gift cards, and give it to the staff members in a weekly pickup. And, you know, look, man, these people were your sales reps. They were selling your cars. And they talked about your beer probably more eloquently over time than you did, and you being the brewery owner. You know, like over time, these people probably became more experts in many aspects of your business than you ever knew or were. And the second they went away, we saw that right away. Like, okay, we're on an island. We need to be the experts in everything again. And you realize the weight that an employment force carries, that net, what they carry, is a lot more than just pulling a handle and going, here's your beer. This particular product came from this is the reason it's here. So with them not in the room, it felt very empty. And so I definitely said, hey, let's take care of them in whatever way possible. And the simple thing of just a meal a day, here's some gift cards. We had some farmers step up and give us microgreens. We do support a lot of farms here. And they saw what we were doing, and now it still is continuing. Like, that's special to me, is when a vendor says, like, even Sysco, the massive food vendor, said, can we step in and help in any way? We had a dentist's office drop off toothbrushes and toothpaste, and that was easy. And then tomorrow, we're releasing, I guess it's a collaboration of kind of spirit with other Half Brewing Company in Brooklyn. Sam called me and said, what do you think about this idea of brewing a beer where all proceeds go to this charity that helps the unemployed, specifically in the service industry? And I stepped in and said, the only problem I have with that is I have more than the average small brewery, 120 people. So we decided that beer releasing tomorrow called All Together is going to all go to our staff first to ensure that they're taken care of. So we've done some things to hopefully take care of the people who, when they come back, will need them desperately because they're so trained at what we do. Yeah, fuck, yeah. Training is the hardest thing ever, right? It's like, oh, God, 6 months from now, you'll finally understand what that means. And we had them all there. We had them all ready to go. And we had some world-class bartenders, kitchen people. The socioeconomics is crazy. We have a lot of Hispanic people in our kitchen. It's like their world got hit so much harder and different than ours. So we're trying to keep kitchen people employed to keep steady paychecks. And sorry to go on a little tangent. It's just,
no, not at all.
This Pandora's box is never ending. And so what we're trying to do is just be a positive light to the community. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, Pat and I stayed open, is we believe that the community dries up culturally. And if it does, there is a spirit lost. That not just capitalism, but that American spirit or that human spirit is like, oh, all the breweries are shutting down. It's kind of hopeless now. We felt like that was unnecessary, so we did continue when we saw the consumer show up, and we had to get COVID friendly really fast, and we had staff members making face masks. Their true story. Their mother went to TJ Maxx or something like that and bought a bunch of material to make masks, and she handmade them. And we had people putting on their vehicles, Arizona Wilderness beer delivery vehicle, and banding together to say, thank you. And we got an email, thank you for employing my husband. I'm unemployed. And even just the nickel and diming that you're doing right now is still paying our bills. So the best thing I think a brewery can do is do what the old England pubs did, do what the old German beer gardens did, is be the center of communication and attention in the community. So that's, I guess it's my soapbox, but.
That's okay. I'm with you. And I love to hear this. And I've almost, except for the last 15 years of the podcast, but then I opened the bar, I've almost exclusively worked in the hospitality industry in my life. And I've never seen the general public care so much as they do right now, too. Like, really understand how hard hit our industry in particular is and will be, by the way. And so that's been encouraging for me and heartwarming. Like, I like to see that. And like I said, I've just never seen it before. And those are some great ideas that you gave out, too, that I think I'm going to adopt and reach out to some of my – I talk to the local breweries and other bars and stuff, but we're all so busily scrambling for how we're going to remain open that some of our – I haven't had some of these ideas to, like, exchange gift cards. That's a great one to be able to give to our staff and do just little things like that since we can't hire them back yet. We're waiting on that PPP program like most of the planet to find out what that is. So, now I'm rambling a little bit, but I'm glad you mentioned the All Together beer, which if you don't know, folks, that's a worldwide collaboration that breweries made a beer. They're all called All Together, too, and the proceeds going to help our industry. Jonathan, I think it's cool that you're like, hey, yeah, I'm in. First, we're going to help ours. And second, I even said my beer buyer was going to buy beer from another state. And I was like, I'm okay to do that eventually. But right now, I think we should stay hyper local because that's what we can do. We don't have a lot of shelf space,
absolutely.
Yeah. I just was like, with the amount of shelf space we have, I'd like it to be California beer for now, And as time goes on, maybe, but... So I think that's a cool thing, John, to do that for your staff. And folks, if you see the All Together beer on the shelves or on the online stores that we all have now, buy that. I'm sure they're great beers. We got ours here that we just got yesterday. It was from Urban Roots Brewery.
Oh, I just was with him.
Peter Hoey.
Peter, one of my favorite people ever. And I just was in Sacramento right as COVID was hitting. And again, another brewery, Peter, you know, I love going and stealing ideas from smart people like Peter. He was our rep, BSG rep for a while. And man, he was also, sorry, you know, to go on another tangent, but he was also like really hitting the stride. You could tell he was showing me where he smokes his meat. And he was like, yeah, we're really good at this now. I feel for people like that who like, we all just got really good at what we were doing and all was clicking. And guys like Peter, you know, who didn't need to open a brewery, did it because like the love of the game, right? The love of the beer. And
yeah, and that is hard to see. But I will say this: I'll toot Peter's horn too, because Peter Hoey is a brewer's brewer. Like all of the brewers know that Peter's a badass when it comes to making mm-hmm. beer. He always has been. He's been in this industry for a while, but he's not like the fan favorite, right? He's not like the Caligione or whoever that even the beer nerds know about. But everybody in the beer industry is like, oh, Peter's beer, drink that. That's in my fridge.
He's the equivalent of a good pilsner.
Yeah, he is. That's exactly right, and he makes a good one.
He's
too.
The human pilsner. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, he's going to love that. I'm going to text him afterward that we just dubbed him the human pilsner.
I love it.
All right, gentlemen. Well, listen, I want to thank you, and I want you to give our listeners information about how they can support Arizona Wilderness and by extension, your team and your staff. Where can they go? What can they do?
Yeah. So what is the easiest way is to go to azwbeer.com. If you're in the state of Arizona, and kind of what Justin alluded to is we're going to kind of protect our boundary line here as we can grow it. I can't wait to send some beer up to you, man, and have a really kick-ass party up there and do a post, because the post-COVID life is, it's going to be like the Bahamas, you know, Lake Havasu and like on the moon all at once. It's going to be incredible. But if you go to azwbeer.com, we've made it pretty easy to navigate to our shop, and we'll deliver beer to your front door. And those delivery people happen to be our old servers. So every time we see demand grow, we're able to go from, you know, 50 employees to like 72 now. So we're able to even hire some back. That's giving the brewer a job. That's giving, we started a malt house project here 2 years ago. So we essentially have a farmer who approached us and said, hey, alfalfa, cotton, and corn, they're the worst crop to grow in Arizona or anywhere, but in Arizona specifically, because we have to pull river water to grow these crops. So we were able to grow barley, and I said, we need a malt house, right? Malt house comes because of the Nature Conservancy. Was able to team up with Pepsi, a true story, and build a malt house here. So we're buying malt from the Sanago Malt Company based an hour north of Phoenix. And we're able to support all of them. So when you do buy beer at any brewery, consider the downstream effects, not the owners. We're no longer the profit margin doesn't even come close to ownership in I would say 100% of the breweries. This is specifically to keep the system afloat so we can come back healthy. So azwbeer.com is the best way to do it. You know, and Pat and I have the Wilderness Humans.
Check out our new podcast, The Wilderness Footprint. That's cool.
You can get that on the website and on iTunes also.
We don't know what the fuck we're doing, man. I don't know if it's on iTunes. We're trying in Apple. I didn't want to offend you. I'm like, I know Justin used to hate other people doing podcasts, but you're so mature now.
Yeah, now it's fine.
So ours isn't a beer podcast though. Ours is different.
I did look through yours because I have to look that stuff up. I am still kind of a jealous prick sometimes, so I go like listen and just make sure nobody's better than I am. That's the extent of my research.
Oh, we're terrible. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a great way. I'm glad that you, by the way, explained that kind of cycle, because I'll say it again. That's to me like capitalism at its finest too. Like when all of the cogs in the wheel work like that, to me, capitalism is not like the grossest, most disgusting executive profits on the planet, like it has been for quite some time now. To me, capitalism is when you do one thing and it employs somebody else and on and on and on. And you described it very well like that, how supporting Arizona Wilderness will do just that.
Well, it's conscious capitalism, right? It's using capitalism to a positive benefit, and rather than what it tends to be, you know, it's this like cancerous growth organism that destroys everything in its path. I mean, this is a different different way to use that energy and that power. And so we're just trying to harness that in a way that it's used for good, you know, and people feel like they make a difference just by drinking some beer. It's really easy.
It's easy and it does make a difference. It really does. I'm seeing it in the breweries here, dropping off, you know, cans every day, and we're going through them fast. So it's good to see the chain at work. AZWbeer.com, right?
That's it, mate.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. The next time we do this will be in a at least post lockdown world. And I want to come party at the brewery.
Yes.
We would love to have you, and I'll plan something special. I remember you doing live shows and that like really annoying audio in the background. I want to do one of those shows. I want to have all 627 people packed in. And you having to deal with that, like the good old days, man.
You'll watch me go insane right in front of your eyes. It'll be great.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for this forum and the ability to speak positive about a pretty shitty situation.
Absolutely. And good luck to you. Stay in touch so we know what's happening.
Done.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for tuning in today. And thank you to Arizona Wilderness Brewing Company for taking the time to tell their story with us. I hope that you all are doing all right out there at home and that you're taking care of each other and that you're not getting too frustrated by this whole thing. You know, this too shall pass. So hang in there. You can send us feedback to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com. I'd love to hear from you and your stories about how you're dealing with things during this time. It's looking like out here in California, we're going to be locked down for for the foreseeable future. Which, by my nervous laughter, you can tell I'm really excited about. But hopefully we beat this thing and we all come out the other side okay. Thanks again to our sponsors. And I will be back with more as soon as I can. Make sure you check out our Facebook page. Like I said, we've got a live Zoom that we did up there with everybody. And I think we'll be doing more of those also. And it's the best way to keep tabs on what's happening right now. It's probably even more up to date as the than the website, as I'm kind of busy running the hop grenade at the same time. So bear with us. I will get to you as much content as I possibly can. Thank you. Take care of yourselves and take care of your beer if you're brewing. All right. We'll see you next time.